Fedheads, welcome to another episode of Sharing Our Pairings. This is Sharing Our Pairings episode 78, Habanos and Scotch 2.0. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon. We're broadcast around the world on Armed Forces Radio Network, heard on CigarFederation.com, and every podcast device that connects to the internet, and all the ones that don't, too. Thanks for tuning in tonight. I'm joined, as always, with my co-host, Robbie Rass. Rob, what's going on tonight, brother?
Oh, you know, just chilling. getting ready for mentally preparing myself for IPCPR. And
IPCPR, is that coming up?
I've heard. That's the rumor.
Weird.
So you've referenced this occasionally. I've never asked you.
Okay.
Are there really podcast devices that don't connect to the internet?
Well, I mean, essentially, for the most part, what most people do is they don't actually stream the podcast. At some time at 1 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the morning, presumably when they're on Wi-Fi, I hope, their podcast downloads and then they listen to it offline like I do on the drive to work, presumably, or, you know, cramped into some passenger vehicle, some sort of public transit stinky thing.
I'm oddly comfortable with public transit when I'm on vacation. At home, not so much.
That's so funny because when Laura and I came to the sunny city of San Francisco, and yes, it was sunny when we came.
It was, and that was strange.
It was hilarious. We actually took a bunch of public transit, and we were sort of stuffed on there with people going to work and people coming back from work, and it just felt normal. It just felt like we were just a part of the thing and whatever. It just felt normal. I feel like I've taken enough transit in my own city now that public transit in another city is no big deal.
Yeah, it's Muni is kind of the main public transit in San Francisco. There's BART too, but Muni is more of they've got buses and light rail type trains and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
More stops. BART is like a
rapid transit.
Yeah, it's like more direct. I mean, yeah. They stop every 10, 15 minutes as opposed to every 4 or 5 blocks or whatever it is. Muni sucks. I will tell you that Muni is kind of awful. But the subway in New York, man, it's confusing. And it's a bit intimidating if you don't know where you're going, and you can easily get on the wrong train.
Well, because they have all their lines set up by color, right? Like you have to get on the red line or the blue line.
And they kind of then they go both directions out of each stop, so you got to make sure you're going uptown or going, you know, whatever. And you kind of just need to know the geography. And by the end of our trip, we were only there for 4 days. But by the end of our trip, I felt really comfortable. We only got on the wrong train once, What I liked about those, they had the ones that would stop every few blocks, and they also had express trains. And one of our stop was an express stop. So if we were going, you know, we wanted to go uptown to catch a show or whatever, we would just hop on the express, and it got us there in like half the time, which was nice. But anyway, this is not a show about public transportation.
It's not, but that was a fun conversation, and I feel like, you know, we're leading up to IPCPR, so we can kind of dial it in at this point, right? Can't we?
Absolutely.
Yeah, no. So, of course, we're smoking Habanos, which is really unusual for the show. We typically do not smoke Habanos. We don't want to take anything away from the wonderful show that airs on Monday night, hosted by Seth Big Tuna, What Embargo. If you haven't checked it out, you should check it out. But you know what? Leading up to the IPCPR, and we're just tossing up, as they say, a pop hitter. How's the expression, Rob?
I don't know.
Just when they throw up an easy hitter. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, like a pinch hitter?
Yeah, just, you know, easy peasy.
Okay. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the extent of my baseball knowledge. Anyways, moving right along to the cigar knowledge, which hopefully I do know what I'm talking about. I'm smoking a Ramon Eones. This is from my trip to Cuba in November 2015. Managed to snag quite a few of these, actually, and it's the Ramon Eones Club Eones. It's the Edition Limitada 2015. And one of the nice things about going down to Cuba, because this is very different from Nicaragua, where, and certainly the Dominican and Honduras, where they produce a cigar, and the cigar is expected to be consistent. It comes out of one factory, and it's consistent. One cigar should taste like the next cigar. This should taste like the next cigar. In Cuba, maybe not so much. And so we ended up smoking, like, I think I want to say 3 or 4 different box codes. And the box codes denotes when it was manufactured and what factory it came out of. And honestly, there was a remarkable difference between the different box codes. One of the box codes, the OPG, it was good. Like, it was really good. That was probably one of the better ones. And it was maybe a box split. And then we smoked the RAE AGO. And it was like, I got maybe a quarter inch, half inch in. And I'm like, yeah, okay, we need like 5 boxes of these. This is phenomenal. And it's so funny that with, you know, the Cuban manufacturing that there's that much of a discrepancy. What are you smoking there? You're also smoking Ramon Eones.
I am. I'm I'm not too hip to the Habanos, really. I don't smoke them very often. And I've got a handful of them in my humidor that have been gifted to me or make their way into my humidor one way or another. I've never actually bought any, but legal or not, I've never bought any. But I'm also smoking a Ramon Ayones. This is the, oddly enough, Exclusivo Canada, in honor of our great host here. And actually, oddly enough,
your host?
No, just you.
Oh, it's me.
Yeah. And you got your big Canadian flag back there.
Roger that.
You don't have to apologize. It's okay. this is actually circa 2010. And you reviewed this back in December of 2014. And this exact cigar, and you gave it a 90, a.k.a. box split. And I was reading through your review as I was smoking the probably the first third. I'm creeping into the second third here. And you kind of nailed it. There's that you referenced it as, and I'll quote here, sweet, unmistakable Cuban tobacco flavor, which that's the best way to describe it because it doesn't taste like anything else to me. And I mean, I don't smoke, like I said, I don't smoke much Cuban cigars, Cuban tobacco, but there's a very specific flavor. To me, it's like a buttered toast type of flavor, maybe a little bit of like a honey toast type thing. But that's... there's really no other way to describe it. And, you know, there's some milk chocolate in there and there's a little bit of spice. You call it a white pepper spice. I call it the same thing on the retro hill as well. This is a really, really nice cigar. This was gifted to me by my buddy Jamie. He and I did a very extensive trade and this was sent to me as kind of a gift on top of that, which was very, very nice of him. I mean, the cigar is 6 years old. And it's smoking like a champ. It started out, and I was asking John about this, and if any of our viewers know, there's a lot that I don't know about tobacco. And when I first looked this up, and even now, the ash is really, really dark. And I don't necessarily know what that means. And I know it means something. And I know some. I probably do know it somewhere in the recesses of my mind, but I can't seem to find it. But other than that, it's smoking great, and I'm really enjoying it. We've got some fantastic, fantastic whiskeys to jump into.
They're not bad. I'm getting sort of similar notes. Ramon Ayones is one of those marcas where I can buy a random box of Ramon Ayones and be confident that they're going to be good. And I can't say that about a lot of brands, Cuban or non-Cuban. There's a select amount that are out there that I really like. Ramon Ayones, for me, very consistent, regardless of what it is. The Exclusivo Canada, I mean, you have to put out a pretty darn good cigar because with the taxes here, that cigar is not going to be cheap when it hits the shelf. And if it sucks, they're not going to buy it. And you got to put out a good cigar. Ramon Ayones putting out an Exclusivo Canada, that's kind of a softball. That's an easy one. Canadians are going to buy that one. I'm getting, and this kind of takes me back to when I reviewed this Ramon Ayones Edition Limitada. Very soft initially. It starts out with just tons of creamy. It's like drinking a hot chocolate with like steamed milk in it. It's just so velvety in the mouthfeel. I know it's going to evolve when it gets about halfway. It gets a lot more body to it. But this is just, it's a fantastic start. And I think hopefully it'll pair really well with these whiskeys, which I'm pretty excited about. I'm not going to lie. I mean, we're going with some big dogs. First up is the Little Mill. If you don't recognize it, that's okay, because you shouldn't. This distillery has been long closed for a very long time. You can see on there, established 1772, making it one of the oldest distilleries ever. It is closed. It has been mothballed. The bottle here, if you're not familiar with it, is really designed to be looking like a still, like a whiskey still or a spirit still. Non-chill filtered, unpeated. And what happens with a lot of these distilleries is that they go to business and another distillery comes along and buys all their stock. And this is what's happened here is there's a huge warehouse full of this spirit that's been sitting around and they just keep bottling it. I've got the first release. I've got the second release. Second release is really good. I think the first release is special. They only did 3,000 bottlings. It was bottled in 2012 and it's 46% ABV, which is quite high for an older bottling. But, phenomenal. Originally, a little bit about Little Mill. It was a Lowlands distillery. They actually were located near Glasgow. Again, founded in 1772. They were dismantled, closed in 1996. And then I think the remaining, the shell caught fire some years later and essentially was completely gutted. Originally, at the time, they used the Kilpatrick Springs as their water source, and they were, because they're a Lowlands distillery, they did do triple distillation, which is kind of the hallmark of Lowlands distillery, but they did switch to a double distillation in, I think it was 1931, so that was kind of interesting. There's rumors that they actually were around as many as early as the early mid 1700s, because no one kept records. No one had a record of the illegal distillation of whiskey spirit at that time. So it's possible that that's older, but because they're closed, that makes Bowmore the oldest distillery, being opened in 1779. So it's pretty special because, you know, there's only 3,000 bottles. If you didn't get your grubby hands on it at the time, good luck. I think I was looking for some information on the distillery before we started the show, and I think the bottle goes for something like $600, 600 euros, if you can get your hands on it.
I've actually, while you were talking, I was searching for it because this is phenomenal. I'm looking here, and there's... It's called winesearcher.com, and they have, there's 7 bottles available, and they're all the
full price of,
yeah, they're all the second release.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know, these are in American dollars. So there's one in, there's 4 bottles in Switzerland. This one's in Lucerne, and it is $289 for the bottle. That's the cheapest. And then it goes up to 314, 335, 446. The highest is 606, and that's in Belgium. So,
but that's the second release.
This is the second release. The average is, 379. This it includes tax. It does not include shipping. So, yeah, it looks like it's not the easiest thing to get your hands on.
No, but you know, on the nose, for me, I get a lot of heather. Like it's a very bright sort of flowery green nose with some butter scotch kind of underlay to it. But again, very, very light, very soft. But it's, I mean, you nose this and you're just like, this is what I want scotch to nose like. It's just very inviting. It's not very in your face, very soft. Now I've been sipping on this before the show and during the show, so I know it's not soft. At 46%, it packs a little bit of heat. So I'll let you talk about what you're picking up as I take some sips here.
I was actually surprised when you said it was 46%, because it is smooth as all smoothness.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was going to come up with an analogy, but only inappropriate things popped in my mind, so I'm going to move on. family show. No, this is, it's fantastic. The one thing that I would say that I get a lot on the nose is I get, you'd mentioned kind of like a butterscotch. I get kind of like a creme brulee, yeah. like a little bit thicker, a thicker sweetness with that caramelized sugar on top, you know? But yeah, it's just really, really soft is a nice way to put it. And it doesn't feel like it's got, like it's 46%. It doesn't have that bite to it. It's a scary 46% because that goes down real, real smooth.
Yeah, on the palate, I'm getting surprisingly, I get a lot of that sweetness. It's kind of two layered, so I get an initial sweetness and then I get more complexity to it. And it finishes very salty, which is quite surprising. In fact, the finish is quite dry, so I get some saltiness and then the finish is almost immediately drops off. Like there's no lingering finish except maybe a little bit of burn from the alcohol. But very good. I'm going to have to take some more sips here to see if I can really capture the notes in my mind.
Yeah, there is a savory note to it. That saltiness that kind of hits the sides of the tongue for me. But you're right. It is kind of a crisp finish. I get a lot of lingering sweetness on my tongue.
Yeah.
And that you get that kind of that pucker almost on your tongue from the alcohol. Mm-hmm. That is, it's much more pronounced, I think, in this, because normally when you're sipping on a whiskey that's, you know, 46% and up, you're going to get that pucker, but you're also feeling the heat from the alcohol content. I'm not getting a lot of that heat at all. This is way too easy to drink, man. But I do get kind of a nutty note on the finish too.
Interesting. I mean, how's it going with the cigar? Because I'm finding that if I take a draw off the cigar too quickly after the dram, The cigar is very sweet, very chocolatey. It's like a Hershey bar. It's like smoking a Hershey bar, and I think that's what I put in my original notes for this Club Iones. So they're going well, but the cigar really is competing for the sweetness factor.
Yeah, see, this cigar to me isn't super sweet. It's led with that toasty flavor, that toasty buttered toast, maybe a honeyed toast. There is some milk chocolate in there, and there's it's got more of a like a dry body to it, if that makes sense. And maybe that's just a product of the whiskey, because the whiskey does have that dryness in the finish. It's very satisfying, creamy. It's got a nice mouthfeel to it. The flavors do kind of coat the palate a little bit. It's interesting, though, being someone who smokes predominantly Nicaraguan cigars, coming over to smoking the Sabano, it's so much lighter in flavor and complexity, not complexities, lighter in flavor and lighter in body.
Yep.
And I think that I can see a lot of guys who normally smoke their, you know, their double Lajeros for breakfast going over and smoking a Cuban and just be like, oh, this is crap. It doesn't have enough flavor. You really have to focus on it. It's very delicate in the flavor profile. It reminds me of a lot of the cigars that I really, really enjoy that happen to have Dominican tobacco in them.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have that Dominican. Take that Dominican note and change it to that sweet Cuban note, and that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
A little bit of spice on the retrohale for sure. It's pairing quite nicely, actually, because I'm not getting that fight, that sweet fight that you're having. I'm getting all the sweetness from the Little Mill. It, and that flavor, like you said, it cuts off right at the end. It does pucker the tongue a bit. I almost want to take a sip of water in between, but I don't.
Yeah.
And it's the pairing is this is like a vacation pairing. Mm-hmm. Like I'm at a resort or someplace that I really can't afford to be at, but I'm there anyway. It's like I got invited to a party that I don't have the credit rating to get into, but I'm still enjoying it.
I mean, we're definitely on easy mode for this show, I think.
Yeah.
We'll continue to be on easy mode. Just a reminder to our audience, you're tuned into Sharing Our Pairings, episode 78, Habanos and Scotch 2.0. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon, joined by my co-host, Robbie Rass. We are broadcast around the world on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in wherever you are in the world and however you're tuning in. We just appreciate your tuning in. We're smoking some Habanos, drinking some very old Scotch, about to drink some older Scotch, because... I'm going to come back to this, Little Mill. I feel like I want to come back. I know we've got a lot of audience questions. Actually, maybe what I'll do is touch on one of those audience questions here to give us a break.
Oh, wow, we do have a lot of audience questions.
And as always, Bob Dog at the top of the charts. Thanks very much, Bob Dog, for your question. He wants to know, I know tonight is a whiskey show, but I wonder if Rob wouldn't mind giving us. You know what? We're going to save that question for the After Dark segment.
Yeah, let's jump into that later.
I'm going to move on to the next question, which is, there we go, from Gabby. Gabby Bello, a new Fedhead member. Thanks for joining the Fedhead crew. He commented on YouTube and wanted to know, what age did you guys start drinking whiskey, and was it a transition? That's kind of an interesting question. You know what? I'll jump in that and let you chance to drink there. I didn't get into whiskey until, I want to say, 2009, believe it or not. 2008, 2009. And it was really a coworker and turned good friend, Charles. He really got me into whiskey in a big, big way. Before that, I kind of thought whiskey was pretty much the foulest tasting thing ever. And Charlie kind of gave me some whiskeys with training wheels and took me around the map. And now I'm drinking the, you know, super Octomore, massively peated Ardbeg, and everything in between. So it was a transition. I mean, I started out really with the light whiskeys, you know, the Glenlivets, the Glenfiddichs, and then kind of worked my way up. And I'm happy because I really enjoy whiskey as a spirit. I think it's opened my palate for cigars more, and I think it's made me appreciate a lot of other spirits as well. How about you, Rob? What was your experience? How did you get started?
I started probably in 2008 as well, and I got a new job, and they flew me back to Winston-Salem, North Carolina for training, and I was in between jobs for a while before I started this one. So I was living a little light as far as funds were concerned. So we're on this trip, and it's the kind of thing where they take you out every night. They took you to dinner, and nice. And then afterwards you go out to one of the local bars, but they weren't buying drinks, which to me was probably some sort of insurance thing. But and they were very informal after dinner. It was, hey, you guys can do whatever you want. We're going to be over here type thing. And I couldn't really afford to keep buying drinks all night. So yeah. The first night that I was out there, I just on a whim, I bought a double of Maker's Mark.
Nice.
On the rocks. And I just figured I'll just nurse this all night. And I did. And it's, you know, it took a while to go from cocktails. And I liked everything kind of sweet back then.
Yeah.
Like one of my favorite cocktails was a Bacardi Limon and 7-Up, which I can't even think about drinking now. But that's what I used to drink back in the day. And so that was it, because I wanted to save money. I spend $10 on one drink and it lasts me all night.
Yeah.
And you know, I didn't want to be that guy. So nobody could really tell. It's like, I'm just drinking. Oh, I'm just having another Maker's. You know, I'm just having another Maker's. And by the end of the trip, I was enjoying it. And but I came home and whatever. And then I had asked my father-in-law's permission to marry my wife, who wasn't my father-in-law at the time, nor was she my wife at the time. But he was a big Scotch guy. And so I didn't like Scotch at the time. And he poured me like a really big, and I think it was Talamore Dew, I think was the first one that I had. And it was just, it's a blend and it wasn't anything special, but it was a big glass and I worked my way through it. And I was determined to like Scotch because he liked Scotch and we didn't have a whole lot in common. So I needed that common ground and here we are. it just kind of snowballed from there. But I did the same thing as you. And I went home and after that trip and bought a bottle of Glenfiddich and a bottle of Glenlivet, the basics. And got comfortable with those. And I didn't spend a whole lot of time on blended scotches. I kind of just went straight for the single malt stuff. And it just kind of grew from there.
That's fair. So, I mean, it's interesting that we had sort of the same journey. I think it's very unusual, I think, from what I've talked to people about, for them to be a natural scotch drinker. I think a lot of people have to kind of go up to it. But that being said, I have met a few Scotch drinkers who have hopped into the deep end. They said, you know, their first experience was just a super peaty Scotch and they loved it. I was not that person. So I'm kind of excited to move on to our second whiskey, second Scotch tonight. And it's kind of got a little bit of a story. This is the Glenfiddich 30. This is bottle number 141 from cask selection number 19. It's numbered. When you get this fancy, it's numbered. This is a special bottle for me because this was a transition from one industry to another, and I picked up this bottle as a sort of celebration to myself. And I think at the time, it was like my 35th birthday or 36th birthday or something like that. And I wanted to treat myself. I'd never really spent any kind of serious money on whiskey before. Like I had some $80 bottles, $100 bottles, but $30 Glenfiddich was certainly more than that. So I was excited. I'm going to hold it up because you can see, compared to our first whiskey, she is quite a bit darker. And there's a reason for that, because this spirit has spent 30 years in Spanish Oloroso casks, and she's only 40%, but you know when it's spent 30 years in Oloroso casks that it's got some pepper, some real big notes to it. A little bit about Glenfiddich. Of course, they are a Speyside distillery located near Dufftown, founded in 1886. We've talked about them many, many times. They use the Robbie Dew as a water source, and they produce an absolutely mind-boggling amount of spirit every year, 10 million liters, almost 3 million freedom gallons, 2.64 million freedom gallons, which is just a stupid amount of spirit. I'm excited. I'm gonna take some noses here, and I don't know what you're gonna talk about because we're drinking the same thing. But I'm gonna take some noses.
Yeah, John and I are definitely drinking the same thing. Tripp pointed out to me that Talamore Dew is actually Irish, and that's not what I was. I looked at the bottle, and that was actually not the Scotch that I was thinking of. I'll have to find it. But it was something that was not. No, here it is. It was Cutty Shark.
Oh. Cutty
Sark, but not Shark. That's not very good stuff. But, I mean, no offense to anybody who drinks it. But that's what he poured me. And he said it was like one of the easiest scotches that he had to drink. So that's what I powered there.
It's something.
I earned my wings. That's so. Thanks to Tripp for pointing that out. It was definitely not Talamordu. I don't know where that name came from. I don't even know if I've ever had Talamordu before. This Glenfiddich 30. I mean, look at that. It's beautiful. I've never had this before. Oh man, I just took a little nose. I've never had this before, so I'm excited.
So off the nose, I'm definitely getting that Oloroso influence. But interestingly enough, I'm not getting a lot of the spices and pepper that I normally associate with Oloroso. I'm getting a lot of that stewed fruit note. But it's very soft. It's very subtle. It's a lot more subtle than, you know, what I typically pick off a younger whiskey. But, you know, I'm excited to have a sip.
It has, excuse me, it has a, like a sherry note to it to me. And maybe I'm just, that to me is that kind of stewed fruit and a little bit of spice.
Yeah, from the Oloroso sherry cask, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, well, duh.
Yeah.
what was I thinking? Not Oloroso, but what's the other one? The other wood?
Pedro Jimenez?
No, that they're using in Japanese whiskeys we were talking about last week.
Mizunara wood.
Mizunara, that's what I was thinking when you said that. Well, duh, that's why it smells like sherry, because it's a sherry cask. Genius. That's two today.
No, but I mean, at least you're right.
You know,
you weren't. You know, I'm really getting a lot of that American oak bourbon influence.
Like,
no, you're not, Rob.
No, bro.
it's Oloroso.
I mean, taste is subjective, but you're wrong. Okay, well, that's good. Now I feel better about it. Yeah, I have to take a sip of this.
Yeah, I'll let you take a sip of that while I kind of talk a little bit about this whiskey. I mean, I think one of the things people need to realize is that whiskey can age out, and I think for me, I know there's older Glenfiddichs out there. I don't know that I'd grab it. I mean, I'd love to taste it. If someone wants to pour me a Glenfiddich 40, you're certainly not going to hear a no out of my mouth, but there's a certain point at which you take a spirit too far, and for me, the Glenfiddich 30 it's a very soft whiskey. It's almost a whiskey you have to reach for the flavors, and they develop over time. Like if you drink this now and we come back to it in 20 minutes or 30 minutes, there's a little bit left in the glass, it's going to evolve significantly, because this is a dram that you really have to reach for the flavors. It's so nuanced. And it's probably good that we're pairing it with Cuban cigars, because I feel like if we're pairing it with non-Cuban cigars, they would, like, even the softest Connecticut would just blow out this whiskey. It's so nuanced.
It's interesting. What is the, what's the ABV on this?
It's only 40%.
Hmm.
And the problem with a lot of older whiskeys, not necessarily all the case, because it depends how the whiskey ages. Sometimes the water evaporates and the ABV goes up. Sometimes the alcohol evaporates and the ABV goes down. It has to be bottled at 40%. And, you know, that's I bet out of this cask probably only had 10% of the cask left by the time it was aged at 30 years, because every year you're losing spirit. It's evaporating out. And you can only lose so much spirit before there's nothing left in the cask to bottle. So I don't know how far down that cask was, but I'm sure they had to crack a few casks to do that that bottling.
It's interesting. It's you're right. You have to look for the flavor here. And I mean, I'm getting some kind of caramelized sugar. Almost like a sugar cane. And I mean, there's some, I beyond that, I don't know what I'm getting. It's, I'm a little bit befuddled, but like you said, this hasn't been open that long. No. Hasn't been in the glass that long, about 20 minutes now, maybe. Well, I poured it before we started. So
I mean, I think Glenfiddich really hits when they talk about their tasting notes. They say the taste is complex. Well, that's not really a tasting note. It's seductively woody. Okay. Well, all whiskey's kind of woody. And it's got an emphasis on floral sweetness. Well, yeah, I mean, that just tells you how, and you know, it's not a knock against Glenfiddich. It's just, it's a very subtle, soft whiskey that you have to reach for. And I feel like this is one where I'm going to leave quite a bit in the glass and come back to it, because I feel like my palate really needs to energize itself to pick it up. But I mean, on the nose, I mean, it really is that sherry forwardness.
Yeah.
Just without that pepper bomb, that bite that a lot of sherry casts, that pepper that sherry has.
I feel like I'm tasting that bite more so than anything else. I'm getting that tongue pucker. I definitely get that sweetness and the wood and all that, which, yeah, like you say, you're going to get that every time you try it. John, you were kind enough to pour me a bunch of this, so I really only used half of the pour that you gave me. So excellent. I may that was intentional because this stuff is pretty impressive. I would like to taste this on a fresh palate. Yeah, I mean, I'm really kind of fixated on that sugarcane flavor, which, I mean, if you've ever like bit into a piece of sugarcane, it's got a vegetal flavor to it as well.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I'm getting here. There's, and I mean, the wood notes, but it smells a lot more sherry than it tastes.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. And I don't want to say that I'm disappointed. I'm not. But so far, that Little Mill is stealing the show by far for me.
Yeah, so I find when I roll the Glenfiddich around on my tongue and kind of let it play with the different centers of my tongue, I get a lot more sherry spice, a lot more pepper. I was actually getting to the point with this Club Iones where it's starting to get a little spicy itself. But even at 40%, this Glenfiddich 30 is still standing up to the cigar. And again, I think, you know, if you're going to pair a really aged whiskey, you got to be careful because the older the whiskey gets, the more nuanced it becomes. It gets, you know, most whiskeys, even the really peaty whiskeys, are going to get really soft, really elegant. And you don't want to, I mean, if you're spending that kind of money on a aged whiskey, you don't want to lose those flavors. So you got to be careful. You don't want to be, I mean, no disrespect to Skip Martin, but you don't want to be pairing no Neanderthal with a 30-year-old whiskey.
You're just blowing it out. Yeah. Just to kind of harken back to our talk about how did you get into whiskey, I'm looking in the chat room here. And Tripp is saying that he tried a few different things, but the first scotch that really made him say, whoa, I love scotch, was Lafroig.
That's funny.
So just like you had mentioned. To me, the Lafroig was a labor of love on my part because I've told that story before. My wife bought me the bottle just out of nowhere, and I pretended to like it even though I didn't. And now I don't have a bottle, which makes me sad. Yeah, this I would like to try this on its own. One thing I will say about this Ramon Iones, the Exclusivo Canada, it's ramping up as we get into the midsection here.
Yeah,
it's got a lot more spice coming through, a lot more flavor, relatively speaking. It's not blowing up like Neanderthal style, since we'll use the same cigar that you were talking about, but it's definitely kicked things up a notch. This is a fantastic cigar. Wow.
Yeah, that's what I like about the Ramon Iones. I find that they don't show all their cards right off the start. You know, like a lot of like it depends on the blend. A lot of there's many non-Cubans where they'll start out like pepper bombs, and I think, I don't even know if I can smoke this, and by the time I'm a half inch in, all the pepper's gone and it's really creamy, which, hey, that works for me. Yeah. Ramon Iones, totally different. I mean, that just becomes bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger till you're done, which, hey, that's, you know, that's a great way to go too, because I'm definitely a fan.
Yeah, this is a cigar that I'm going to, and I feel like I say this about something every week, this is a cigar that I'm going to look to see if, I know this is 6 years old, so probably not going to be that easy to find, but I would love to track down a 5-pack of these. These are fantastic, man.
I'm going to get into another audience question. This is another one posted by Gabby on our YouTube channel. Gabby wanted to know, how did you get your start with Habanos? He says, I know John probably can speak more on this. If so, what's a good place to start? Believe it or not, I'm not a super experienced Habanos smoker. I really started smoking with non-Cubans, and I know that sounds really odd from a Canadian because everyone says, well, you know, you can go and get a Cuban at your local store. And that's certainly true if I want to drop, you know, 30, 40 bucks. But to a beginner smoker, you don't necessarily want to drop 30 or 40 bucks on a Habanos to start out with because you don't know if you're going to like it. I really didn't get my Habanos education till, gosh, I want to say 2013, when I went down to Cuba with a group from Toronto and got sort of the deep end of the pool with Habanos and got taken all over the flavor map and all over the market map. And that was a great trip and a great experience for me to just smoke a whole bunch of stuff I'd never smoked before. Rob, you can talk before I get into the last part of this question. You can talk about how you got your start with Habanos.
Yeah, being an American citizen, and not having that much access to Cuban cigars, Habanos, if you will. I didn't really smoke any for a while. I mean, my introduction to cigars was Nicaraguan cigars, was A.J. Fernandez, was Diesel, Unholy Cocktails, and Man of Wars, and that kind of thing. And that's, in a way, that's kind of akin to jumping into your Scotch journey by starting off with Laphroaig. I was starting off with the big Lajero bombs and, you know, all the spice, which is kind of the opposite of what my palate is now. But with Habanos, I'd smoked a few here and there. You know, buddy gets some Monte Cristos or some Cohibas that are probably fake. And what really started it for me was a trip to Mexico. This guy on the beach was selling a bunch of boxes with the little glass tops on them. And that was really where I learned how to love Cuban cigars. That's a joke.
Yeah, because those, yeah. I don't know how much of our audience immediately picked up on that. But I was going to say, did you get the seashell necklace? Because you
got
the seashell necklace with the box.
The necklace. They had puka shells when I was there, so I did a puka shell necklace. No, you want to stay away from those. No, actually, the first time I really found some Cubans that I like was on my honeymoon in Spain. We found in Madrid, I found a shop, yeah, and bought the basics. I bought a Cohiba Siglos 1 or 2. I don't know which one it was. And Vegas Robinha and a few Partagas Series D number 4, which was just kind of the basic, right? I mean, that's like, it's just like Scotch. Those are like the Glenlivet and Glenfiddich 10 and 12 and the basic stuff.
Yep.
And that Partagas, I should say.
Partagas.
I always want to call it Partagas. Partagas. That was the first one that I really enjoyed. And I smoked that one that night, and I went back and bought some more. And I smoked a handful of them in Madrid, and then I remember the last one that I smoked, the last one I had, I smoked walking around. Our hotel was right next to the Louvre, the Hotel Regina, which is actually featured in the first Bourne Identity. And we were right next to the Louvre, so I lit it up, and I'm walking around in a little park right in front of the Louvre by that big triangle thing and all that. So it was a really cool experience. Just, I'm never really over there. I don't really get to smoke Cubans, so it was pretty cool. But that was probably the first time I really smoked them, and I haven't really smoked that many since, to be honest. There's so much coming out of Nicaragua. We're doing reviews and everything, and I don't get a lot of time to enjoy these, so this is a nice little treat for me.
Yeah, and I think you touched on some of the major marcas there. Gabby's wondering, you know, what's a good starting point? I mean, really, Partagas Series D number 4, Monte Cristo number 2 or number 4. You know, those are, I don't want to say they're the milder end, they're just the more approachable Cubans. And from there, I'd get into Romeo y Julietas. And then from there, Ramon Eones. And from there, I don't know. I mean, Juan Lopez, Essential, like there's so many marcas out there, but you know, the tobacco is very approachable from the Cuban side. If you're already a cigar smoker, you're not going to have a problem picking up a Cuban cigar. I mean, they're very approachable. In a lot of cases, if you've been smoking non-Cuban, you're going to find them quite a bit softer and very, very little spice, especially on the Serie D number 4 and the Monty's. It's creamy, it's sweet, there's some hay, there's some vegetal notes. It's totally different cigar experience.
Yeah, the Romeo y Julieta, the Short Churchill, was another one that I liked.
Oh, that's a great cigar.
I came across a few of those, and my wife, as a gift, got me a box of the Monte Cristo Double Edmundos that I really enjoyed. I worked my way through that box. I think I've got a couple left. But again, all very light in profile. So if you're looking for big flavor bombs, you're looking in the wrong place.
Exactly.
With Cuban cigars.
Just to remind your audience, you're tuned in to Sharing Our Pairings, episode 78, Habanos and Scotch 2.0, or DOS, as they might say in Espanol. Poquito Espanol. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon. We're broadcast live around the world. I'm here with my co-host, Robbie Rass. Thanks very much for tuning in. Wherever you are in the world, we're pairing some Habanos and some Scotch, and we're about to get into the big boy, the Glenrothes. And this is another bottle. It's got a bit of a story. This was kind of another acquisition It's got the stubby bottle, even though it's the fancy dancy Glenrothes. It's still got the same bottle. This is bottling number 3689 of 3708. So I was a little late to the party on this one. They say the character is rich fruits, citrus, nutty, toffee, vanilla. Signed by John Ramsey, approved by John Ramsey. And I agree. And I've actually, just as a side note, I've tried the John Ramsey edition Glenrothes, which is $1,000 a bottle. Oh, yeah. And almost talked myself into buying it before I came to my senses. It was probably one of the single best whiskey experiences of my life. That being said, a little bit about Glenrothes, another Speyside distillery located near Rothes. That's where they get their name from. Founded in 1879, they use the Ladies Well as their water source. They produce a pretty remarkable amount of spirit themselves, 5.6 million liters, which is 1.48 million freedom gallons. And they do something a little different on the market than a lot of other whiskey companies. Instead of releasing age statements, they release vintage statements. So when you look for Glenrothes on the shelf, you're going to see 2008, 2010, 2012, 2014, 2015. That's the way they approach things. And you know what? That works for me. I've had some vintages from them that have been exceptional, and love them to this day. This one is one of those. This is from 1975. I picked this up because it's my birth year. It was first put in the cask in 1975, bottled in 2006. If you're paying attention, you can do the math of that. It's not a young whiskey. 3,708 bottles produced, 43% ABV. They say the bouquet is a wonderfully rich and mature with vanilla, nutty, toffee. We already talked about that. The palate is rich with toffee, vanilla, dark chocolate, vanilla, more dark chocolate underneath. And, I mean, you nose this, and it's just, I mean, you want to talk creme brulee. It's like creme brulee sitting on vanilla bean ice cream with some, I mean, it's got some interesting sort of orangey notes underneath it. Like,
I was going to comment on that.
Yeah. It's almost like, it kind of reminds me of an old fashioned, quite honestly.
Yeah. There's almost, and this is going to sound bad, but there's like a sour note to it.
Mm.
And it's not sour, like sour milk, but just a little bit of a citrusy kind of sour note there that is really interesting, because it is, like you say, that creme brulee big time, and there's a vanilla in there, and and you get that. I almost want to say it's like an orange blossom, but it's more than that, and it's maybe like orange rind almost.
Yeah, I think orange rind is an apt description, because it does have like a sour bitter component in the nose,
and it's a deep sour. It's not unpleasant at all. I hope that I'm not making it sound that way.
It's as if you took an orange rind and then muddled it, and that's all that's in the glass, with maybe a little bit of agua con gas in there.
I can see when you say that this kind of reminds you of an old fashioned.
Yeah,
it's not quite as orange forward as an old fashioned is going to smell, because you're just getting just a little bit of the peel, so you're getting a lot of that essence, if you will. This doesn't have quite that much, but I can see where you're getting with that. With a little bit of the bitters in there, for that spicy, that minor spicy bit. Wow, it smells great. I'm going to jump in and take a sip.
Please do. While you're doing that, I'm going to get into another audience questions, because we've still got some more to go. And this one's from some Bob Dog. Bob Dog says, thanks for your question, Bob Dog. Do you prefer a whiskey cocktail with a cigar, or is it perhaps a good single malt? Well, if you've been paying attention for the last 78 episodes of Sharing Our Pairings, I think I can probably answer that question for both of us. I mean, my go-to is absolutely a single malt, and it doesn't even have to be a single malt. I like blended malt. I like Japanese whiskey with a cigar. To me, that's my go-to. If you sort of my reflex, my gut instinct, I go to that. That being said, Rob's done a great job of educating me on whiskey cocktails, and I feel like, you know, there's absolutely room for me to sit and this is one of the things I'm super excited for the IPCPR for. Yes, excited for the cigars. Yes, excited to see our friends in the industry, but also excited to sit with my good friend Rob with a cocktail like a human being and smoke a cigar.
Yeah, I think that's one thing, and we've got a little time, because it's since we're both doing the same spirits, we actually could have done a fourth. Yeah. But then who knows what the After Dark segment would have been like. Most people don't know that the IPCPR is really the only time a year where we actually see each other in person.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't get up to Canada much, And Canada's pretty big. So if I were there, I might not even be by you. To get back to Bob Dog's question, which do I prefer? I think it's easier to pair with just a straight spirit. It's easier to go with, you know, your favorite bourbon, your favorite single malt, your favorite scotch, your favorite Japanese whiskey, Irish whiskey, whatever. Rum, for example. I think if I'm going to pair with one thing, and I'm only allowed to pair with one thing for whatever weird reason, I don't like that place, it scares me, but if I really only have one thing to choose, it's probably going to be rum. Because rum and cigars is idiot proof.
Yeah.
As long as you're drinking a decent rum, and you're good. It's like coffee and cigars. You're pretty good no matter what you're doing. Sure, there's going to be some outliers. I think more planning goes into the cocktail because you need to know the flavor profile of what it is that you're making. You're making an old fashioned. What's in an old fashioned? Well, you've got bourbon. Okay, so I know what bourbon tastes like. You've got bitters. Well, what do bitters taste like? Well, these are aromatic bitters. They've got a little bit of spice to them. They're not very bitter in flavor, at least in my opinion. I'm sure if I dab some on my tongue, they'd be bitter. But then you've got you're muddling oranges and cherries in there. So what flavors are you getting from that? So you get an idea of what you're going to – all your different components, what are they going to come together to taste like? Well, if you've had an old-fashioned before, and most of you probably have – I know I have because it's my favorite cocktail, like basically of all time. I know what I think will pair well with it and what won't. I think it's just a little bit easier to go with a straight spirit. Sometimes it's a bit more fun to go with a cocktail. The thing with a cocktail is when you're halfway through your cigar, you're going to have to get up and make another one for the most part. Because they don't tend to last as long. Unless you're going to something that is, just pure spirit like a Manhattan. That's going to last a bit longer for me because I'm sipping at it. An old fashioned doesn't last as long because there's ice melting and you drink it before it gets watered down, that kind of thing. But I don't think I can answer your question, Bob. I think I like to pair with just about everything, but it's probably easier to go with a straight spirit.
Thanks for your question, Bob Dog. So I'm getting into the part of this Club Iones where it's I think I described it as a s'more. So you get like that toasted graham cracker with the creamy mouthfeel of a melted marshmallow and then that underlying milk chocolate. And I tell you, it couldn't come at a better time because this Glenrothes 1975 has such a buttery, toffee mouthfeel to it. It's not overly sweet, which I appreciate because I'm not a fan of overly sweet. And I'm not getting into the dark chocolate. I'm not sure if that's because the cigars may be running that over. But I do get a ton of buttery toffee, wonderful mouthfeel. I'm going to swirl it around some more and see if I can pick up some notes and let you talk about how your flavor profile has been going for that.
The pairing is fantastic. I mean, you nailed it with that buttery toffee flavor there. I'm getting a fair amount of chocolate, actually, but more of like a bittersweet chocolate.
Oh, nice.
And it's really more on the finish. Like, I can taste it right now. And that pairs really, really well with the toasty. And I'm getting a bit more spice out of the Ramones right now than I was earlier. And, again, I don't know if it's a product of the scotch or not. The scotch is, like you said, it's not very sweet, this Glenrothes. But it's when I say chocolate, you think, well, chocolate's sweet. But that bittersweet chocolate, like a dark chocolate, you know, where it's got some sweetness to it, but it's more there's more body to the flavor than you get from like a milk chocolate. It's not a milk chocolate flavor to me at all. Definitely some vanilla in there, but more along the lines of like
vanilla bean instead of sweet.
Yeah,
vanilla.
Exactly. Yeah, thank you. That's a better way to say it than what I was going to say. So we'll just go with that. But it's fantastic. It's complex, and there's a lot of flavor in here considering how long it was in that cask. And that's really no comment as to how old you are. But you've only got me by 2 years, but it's still 2 years. But everybody says I look older, so what are you going to do? No, this is fantastic. The pairing is great. It's highlighting the toasty kind of honey notes, that sweetness from the cigars pairing. The sweetness from the cigar isn't super sweet, so getting a little bit of sweetness from the from the Glenrothes goes really well. That chocolate is kind of a bitterness leading into the that toasty note from the cigar. It's really, the pairing is really nice. I still think I'm going to go back to the Little Mill and say that's my favorite of the night.
Now, I was going to say, before you do that, maybe go take a nose and see how much your palate has changed and your nose has changed.
I'm not quite done with this Glenrothes yet, yeah, but I think fair. I will. We've still got a few minutes.
I'm just going back and I'm nosing that Little Mill. And I tell you, it smells like cedar and toast. To me, that's all I get is cedar and toast with like a vegetal note on the nose. I haven't tasted it because I'm going to taste it after, but
yeah,
totally this, different nose now.
All these pairings. I mean, save the Glenfiddich because I don't know. I want to go back to it.
Yeah.
But this Ramoneones is, it's toasty. It's got that, I'm repeating myself, it's buttery and it's got that nice little like a honeyed sweetness to it. There's some white spice on the retrohale. That white spice really kind of clears things out. Take that sip of the Glenrothes and really, I feel like I really get the full bouquet of flavor with that that creme brulee-ish, a little bit of vanilla, a little bit of toffee with that dark chocolate. There's definitely the woody notes in there as well. They kind of go without saying. There's a lot going on in this whiskey, man. A lot going on.
So I'm going to get into, before we wrap up our Armed Forces Radio Network segment, Gabby has another relevant question. He kind of went a little crazy. Thanks very much. We appreciate all the questions. And he wants to know, this is kind of an open-ended question, wants to know, when it comes to whiskey and Cubans, is there a particular Lost on an Island pairing you choose? For me, that's no-brainer. H. Upminster Winston, that's one of my favorite Cuban cigars of all time. And the Glenlivet Nadura, and I don't know what it is about the Glenlivet Nadura, but the Glenlivet Nadura, I think it's the 16-year. It is just, I've paired it time and time again with Cuban cigars, and it's just got enough bold flavor to complement them without enough to run over the nuances. Yeah, the Sir Winston and a Glenlivet Nadura would be my Lost in an Island pairing.
I don't have enough experience to really answer the question, but it would probably be a Ramoneones Exclusivo Canada and this Little Mill 21.
Nice.
I mean, these are special pairings, man, and it's not lost on me that you shared all this stuff with me, so thank you very much. And this cigar was gifted to me as well, so to have one of the most high-end pairings I think I've ever had in my life and have it all be things that were given to me by friends is it's kind of a nice thing. But, yeah, I think that would probably be the answer for me because chances are I'm never going to do it again. I think my chances of finding this cigar are infinitely higher than finding another sip of this Little Mill. Although there's still some in there.
And I know a guy who's got a bottle. Just saying.
So it may just happen. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is next level. And I think that Glenrothes, I think if I were to taste this Glenrothes 75 on its own and then bring that experience into the pairing. And I think that's one thing that we kind of miss on here is, a lot of these things I'm tasting for the first time with a cigar. I don't have experience with them on their own. Maybe I take a sip or two before the show, but not enough to really get a good feeling of what the flavor profile is. And I don't know if that's something that I'm doing wrong or I'm doing right. I guess it doesn't really matter, but it's just another thing. So anyway, answer the question, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I do find that I think it's cigar tasting and whiskey tasting is a very different experience for me. I find whiskey tasting, it's like warming up a car engine. I'm not a car guy, but for me, it's like warming up a car engine. My palate just can't pick up all the nuances and all the flavors in a whiskey. For like I have to taste a whiskey for like 15 minutes to get all of the nuances. For a cigar, I kind of get all the flavors right up front. It's you know, and you can retrohale it. It's a lot easier. You can't really retrohale whiskey. I mean, you could, but you'd really regret it because it would burn the bejesus out of your nose. But for whiskey, I mean, even when I'm at a tasting, I have to go back. I keep having to go back and back, and every time I go back, I'm picking up new flavors, new palate, and new noses. And I know because I've been with other guys who do whiskey tastings, and my flag's going to blow away there. A little windy tonight, but at least there's no rain. And they've mentioned that they can just kind of go in and pick up all the flavors right away. For me, it's a slow burn, and part of me enjoys that. I mean, it's part of the fun of whiskey tasting, I think.
Yeah, I would definitely agree that, especially with like a cask strength or anything that's high ABV, you definitely have to let your palate acclimate. And that's another thing that I feel like I've learned on this show is I need to take a few sips when I'm switching. I'm taking a few sips of water in between, and then you got to take a few sips of the new thing, whatever it is, new beer, new scotch, whatever, before you really get a decent appreciation of what it is that you're tasting. Because, I mean, really, we're bombarding our taste buds with an awful lot here, with three different scotches and a cigar. So, I would definitely agree with the idea that you really have to sip on it a little bit before you really have an idea of what you're working with.
So you said favorite pairing of the night, Little Mill?
Yeah, it would have to be. And I'm going to go back and nose it a little bit. And yeah, I'm getting that cedar like you were talking about. But I still get kind of that underlying sweetness in there. Yeah. And almost get some fruity notes that I wasn't getting before. Interesting. But yeah, I think that was the pairing of the night, followed pretty closely by the Glenrothes. I feel like I need to revisit the Glenfiddich before I make a judgment on that one.
Yeah, for me, it's the Glenfiddich, and I don't know if it's a cigar. Just I've got more experience tasting this Glenfiddich 30, and I know what to expect. Glenfiddich is an easy win for me, followed by the Glenrothes. That Glenrothes, that butter mouthfeel, that buttery mouthfeel to it is just fantastic with cigars. Obviously not something you're going to be pairing with cigars all the time, but if you have the opportunity, great pairing. And, great experience to pair all these different whiskeys. I'm excited for tomorrow night. We're going to have an IPCPR cigar chat as we lead up to the IPCPR this weekend. Make sure to check out all our coverage on YouTube, on podcast. We're going to have a ton of content. It's going to be a little nutty and a lot of fun. And as we say in Share Our Pairings, drink better, but drink less. So, scotchy scotch, warm in my belly.
This is next level shit, man. I need to get more of these Ramon Ayones. That goes without saying. I need a 5-pack of these. And, I know it's not going to be cheap, but I'll pay the price. These are fantastic cigars.
I mean, a lot of the Exclusivo Canadas, quite frankly, and I know, the two marcas that are kind of no-brainers for me, when they release an Exclusivo Canada, it's usually really fucking good. Because it has to be really fucking good. It has to be good to command that price. The Vegas Robenias, the Exclusivo Vegas Robenias, they've done two of them. They're both outrageously good. And I know the Asia Pacifico stuff is usually really good as well, but you gotta pay to play with a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, no kidding. And that's part of the reason that I don't really partake in too many Habanos. Is it's just not easy for me to get my hands on them. And I mean, for the amount of effort that I have to put in to get them, I could just get a cigar that I know that I like, that I'm familiar with, and it's easy to get my hands on. Like I'm looking around for this. You're smoking the Club Ayones, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's $1.59 for a box of 10. Like that's not cheap, man.
Yeah, they were not that price in Cuba. They were much cheaper.
I assume. And, I mean, yeah, I can go to Cuba now.
That's true.
But
maybe one of the future cigar-fed trips will be to Cuba. Who knows?
I doubt
Probably
it.
Probably not.
the budget isn't looking too strong for that kind of thing. But No, I mean, this is the first Ramon Ayones I've ever smoked. So I definitely want to explore that line a bit more. And I mean, even just smoke just the basic Ramon Ayones. No, I've got another Exclusivo, and it's more of like a Churchill size. I can't remember which kind. It might be Exclusivo Asia. Ooh. If they did one. That might be the one that I've got. But I don't know where it is.
If you're going to smoke another Ramon Ayones, I feel like the one that would be really good for your palate would be the Special Selections, because they're readily available, they're relatively inexpensive, and they're little firecrackers. They've got so much flavor. That's a no-brainer stick.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to look into it. See
But
what I can get my hands on.
We do have some audience questions. So Bob Dog, we didn't ask his question, but Bob Dog wants to know he wants to know the synopsis of how your home brewing experience is going. We're in the After Dark segment, so we can talk whatever the fuck we want.
It's a true story. The brewing's been going well. Take a little sip of water there. I took a class at UC Davis last month and learned a lot. The main thing I've learned about the science of brewing is that there are a handful of absolute truths, and that's it. Wow. Beyond that, you get people who swear by the absolute opposite. You know, doing one thing or doing the other, and they can both be successful brewers, home brewers or commercial brewers or what have you. There's a lot of gray area, and some people swear by certain things, and some people swear by doing the opposite, and it's a little bit frustrating. But I've kind of just decided that for me, I want to get my IPA recipe down, which I brewed an IPA back in early June, and it's been I think it was early June. Yeah, it was Charlie's birthday, which was June 3rd or something. My dog Charlie, and I refuse to think that it's good. My wife tells me that it's good, but I feel like she has to do that because of the ring.
Yeah.
But since then I've tasted beers that taste an awful lot like the IPA that I made. Like for example, I just had a Accumulated Knowledge from Modern Times, which I think is an exclusive to Trader Joe's, which is a chain. I don't believe they're in Canada, but it's a kind of a hip, like a craft food store almost. And they have a lot of healthy stuff, but they have a pretty good beer section and good booze section. And they sell a lot of Modern Times stuff. And it's actually relatively inexpensive too. And it's kind of it's an unfiltered IPA. And it had a lot of the same flavors that that mine has. I've realized that the mistake I made is I went way overboard on my bittering hops and didn't pay enough attention to my flavor and aroma hops. So it's a very danky IPA, which I'm not a big fan of a danky IPA. Yeah. I like a juicy IPA. So I made kind of the opposite, which is odd because the odd thing is these are my own recipes and I'm trying to make my own recipes. And I recently brewed, just about a week and a half ago, I brewed an Imperial Stout, which ended up just being a regular stout because it's only 7.9%. So I missed a little bit here on my original gravity, my target original gravity, and I missed a bit on my target final gravity. I tasted it, and it tastes like coffee, 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 coffee. It tastes really good. I'm excited about it, but I'm not going to be able to bottle it for a while. But with that recipe, I went and looked at a bunch of different recipes and picked and choose things that kind of looked at what other people were doing and made my own. With the IPA, I just kind of guessed. I don't know why. And I've realized that I need to really restructure my hop schedule. So that one, for the rest of the year, I'm going to work on the IPA recipe. I'm going to work on the stout recipe until I get them dialed in. It's a lot of fun. I've picked up some new stuff. I got a wort chiller that works really, really fast, which is such a huge, huge difference. It cooled my whole batch from, 250 degrees or whatever it is when it's boiling. 220 is boiling, but it's probably about 250 by the time it's done. And it brings it down to about 75 degrees within 5 minutes. And nice. That's huge. I'm not carrying things anywhere. I'm looking at taking another class at Davis in December, which is much more intense. It's an introduction to practical brewing. So it's like taking homebrew and bringing it to the next level.
Nice.
For commercial production, which it's a week-long class up in UC Davis from 9 to 5, and that's like an hour away. So it would be
real world schooling shit.
Yeah, it would be an interesting week in the double R household because I'd be out the door, by 7:30 every morning, driving up to UC Davis for an hour, and then not going to be home until like 7. But it's in the middle of December, which is a good time for me. It's like after my holiday push with work for design stuff, and before the holiday traveling starts. So, but it's expensive. So we'll see. But it's Bob, thanks for the question. It's I've been reading textbooks on chemistry and weird shit like that, like and realizing how much I haven't taken a chemistry class since high school, mm-hmm. which was, you know, back before cell phones and the internet. So
copy that. Yeah, we didn't have the internet to look up easy answers like you young bucks do today. We had to figure out shit. Hey, I just want to mention
encyclopedias.
Yeah, encyclopedias. I think I put my finger on what I'm getting out of this little mill. It's barley. It's not a vegetal note. It's barley. It's like toasted barley. It's just got so much in the nose barley and then the flavor profile barley. And I don't know if that's because they went from triple distillation to double distillation, so I get more of that barley note. But it's like all I can taste now is like a sweet barley note.
I taste that kind of roasted grain that you're talking about.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just because you told me about it right before I tasted it. But there's a little bit of that in there. But that's just a fantastic, fantastic whiskey, man.
It's maybe awesome. I'll bring some of the second release down. I haven't actually cracked that bottle because I have a lot of open bottles. I've got a lot of unopened bottles, though, and I think when I come down to the APC bar, I'll be bringing some of the unopened bottle samples, and I think the second I will be bottling for you. We'll try that out. I haven't tasted it since I first had a sample and prompted me to buy it, so that'll be interesting. We've got one last audience question before we just kind of shoot the shit. And like I said, Gabby, thanks very much for your questions. You went crazy with the questions, and that makes the show a lot more fun for us. He says, I can imagine you guys are stoked for the IPCPR. Absolutely. It's all I can think about. It's very hard to focus on work right now. But with as many brands coming out as there are, is there anything in particular that you personally are fangirling about? Rob, I'll let you take that one, because I haven't really thought about it, to be honest.
You know, it's funny, man. There's a thread up on SigFed. In the forums, you know, which IPCPR releases are you most looking forward to? And we're posting on average 5 or 6 press releases a day lately.
At least.
Which means that the sites that really track down the news and hustle for that stuff are posting like 10 to 15. So, man, I don't even know. I've almost kind of made the decision to not look at any of that stuff.
Yeah,
I almost want to go in just completely. This is going to sound weird, but I want to go into each booth and have no idea what's coming out. I don't want to say, hey, you know, you've got 16 releases coming out. Let's talk about them. I want the manufacturer to tell me about what he wants me to know about, or he or she wants me to know about, or wants our viewers to know about. Maybe they've got 5 or 6 releases, but there's 2 that they're really excited about. That's what I want to find out. What are they excited about? I mean, yeah, they're going to be excited about all their releases because they kind of have to be. But, I mean, everybody's got a favorite, right?
Yep.
I've got 2 dogs, and I have a favorite. I never tell anybody that I do, but I do. If you follow my Instagram feed, it's probably pretty obvious. I mean, you come out with 5 blends. There's 1 or 2 that tickle you a little bit more than the others. And that's what I want to know, is what are they excited about? I mean, I haven't smoked anything from, Cornelius and Anthony yet. And after that, the interview with Steve Bailey, he was not at all what I expected, and in a good way. I mean, he was just super authentic, and, I mean, given the kind of steampunk look of their brand, I expected a young guy, you know, like a young hip guy. And I didn't expect a guy who's got all that much experience in American tobacco, and you know, with that thick Southern draw, it felt more like, hey, here's a cool steampunk feel, as opposed to, hey, this is a picture of my great grandfather. And I know we get a lot of that, you know, family lineage stuff in the industry, but theirs just feels a little bit different to me. And I'm curious about their cigars. It's coming out of La Zona, and that's probably what I'm most interested in. Going into IPCPR is what's coming out of La Zona, because they're so hot right now. So hot right now. But
so hot right now.
I mean, I'm digging on most of the stuff that they're coming out with. Crown Heads, as always, they're one of my favorites. I'm curious to see Steve Saka's new stuff. Although if you look at his if you follow him on Facebook, you got his angry video today where
I gotta watch that.
Some of his I can't remember the name, Mi Kioria or something like that is one of his releases.
Yeah, so you know what that means in Spanish, right?
No, I don't even know what the real word is.
So, well, it's, and I can't remember how to pronounce it, but I know it in Spanish because I think Pedro told me. So it means something to the general community. It means something different in Nicaragua. In Spanish, it's like your side girl, right? It's like your mistress, right?
Your side piece?
It's like your side piece. In Nicaragua, it's like, it's much dirtier. It's like, yeah, it's
nice.
I don't even want to say it, even though it's like
that, I'm picking up what you're putting
it's
down.
It's like that hot piece of ass that you just can't wait to get home to. Not your wife, not your mistress. But so it was kind of funny because I saw that and I kind of chuckled. And I feel like a lot of his, and I think maybe he went that way because of the Vitola. I don't know. He's a funny cat. He makes me laugh.
Yeah. And the stuff coming out of Foundation.
Oh.
I'm intrigued by
baby.
I'm intrigued by that as well. There's some things that have been announced that I'm not intrigued by at all. So I guess it kind of goes both ways. I think I'm making more mental notes of things that I'm not interested in, I think, if that makes sense.
I'm going to hop in. I'm totally on board. I would call it crowd surfing for cigars, and I'm totally on board with that. I just want to throw myself in the crowd and see where it takes me. Mostly because it's too much. There's just too much. I can't possibly stay up on it. There are some ones that I'm really looking excited. Number one would be the Protocol Lancero from Cubatacano. Cubatacano!
Well, I've already smoked that.
You've already smoked it. I was already excited before I read your review. Now yeah. I read your review and I'm like, I want to smoke two at a time.
It really could be the best cigar of the year.
I'm so excited for that cigar.
It really could be, but I'm trying to think back because I feel like I've said that a couple of times already. And the cigar that I want to make sure I don't forget about, like, came out on January 1st, which was the Illusione H-Town Lancero, which is a fantastic cigar.
Haven't smoked that.
I'm gonna see if there's any more of those left, because that's a cigar I want to make sure I have on my hands before I do my. I'm already thinking about the list in December because I didn't do one last year. I feel like I have to do one this year, and so far those are the two best cigars that I've smoked. You're gonna love that cigar, man, because you love the original.
Yeah,
and it's like the original.
It was a candidate for my cigar of the year last year. So
yeah, absolutely.
Reading your review, I was like, this might go, I haven't even smoked it, and it might be my cigar of the year candidate, and I haven't even smoked it.
It's like, I put it into sports terms because that's how my brain works, but it's like Madison Bumgarner, pitcher for the Giants. He's just a total badass. Totally. He's one of my favorite players, and he's just awesome. He's the reason they won the World Series in 2014. If you know anything about sports or baseball, and you haven't watched that World Series, you have to watch it just for his performances, because he carried the entire team. And it would be like finding out that he has a younger, more talented brother that's just about to come onto the scene. That's the Lancero.
Yeah.
His younger brother would be the Lancero, and he's like the Protocol, if that makes sense. It's like
I want to smoke all the Recluse stuff now that my eyes have been opened. And Fred's SA-17, I mean, goddamn. I mean, I already like Fred pretty much blends, and I just love it. Like he's got my palate. Like, I don't know. I've never seen a blender whose palate is more in lockstep with mine, and it blends something with San Andres Maduro. Forget about it. I can already tell that cigar is getting, like, I'm going to come out of that and I'm going to have to pick up a box, even though my humidor is full. As you said, Saka's stuff. I mean, Saka's got an amazing palate. Nick Melillo's stuff. I'd be interested to see how he follows up with the Wewense. Going broadleaf is just going to the deep end. The Wewense was very nuanced, and he's going to the broadleaf spectrum, which is kind of his wheelhouse. I'm excited for that. I mean, Yeah, it's going to be an interesting IPCPR because I think we're going to come out with a lot of favorites. But the counterpoint to that is we're going to come out with a lot of duds. There's going to be a lot of crap cigars that, frankly, are not ready. And that's not the manufacturer's fault. It's just you got to compress your five-year plan into a 60-day plan. And what are you going to do?
Yeah, another cigar that caught my attention either today or yesterday is the 1502 Sapphire.
Oh yeah. Now is that the Sapphire or the Blue, or is that the same thing?
Sapphire and Blue are the same, I believe.
Okay, I'm excited for that because I loved all of his. I mean, the Ruby, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't tried the XO that he came out with. I think it was last year.
I didn't smoke that at all.
I never did get to smoke that one, so I'm curious. I know it's coming out on a bunch of different Vitolas as well, so hopefully I get a chance to get my hands on that one. But I think that is Hamlet doing anything new?
So nothing's been announced, but
we're going to talk about all this tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't know if I can say this. I guess I can say this because it's not official. I can tell you that I'm friends with Hamlet. I know Hamlet, and I know he's down in Esteli right now, and I know he's blending. Like
Well, I would assume he's been down in Esteli a lot. Well, and has been blending a lot. So
he hasn't
not,
because
that's not breaking news, man.
He didn't have his green card. He wasn't able to travel out of the United States.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so this so maybe this is new news and I can break some news for a change. Hamlet got his green card, he was able to travel out to the to Esteli legally. And he's gone dark, so he's been just blending like crazy. So I'm excited to obviously hang out with him, spend some time with him because he's a good friend, great man. I love him, and obviously I love his cigar blending. And his palate has always been in lockstep with mine, especially the Cuban cigars and the non-Cuban cigars. As soon as he talked about his blend at the IPCPR last year in New Orleans, I was all over it. So I'm excited to see what he comes up with. But I gotta think he's gonna come out with 2-3 blends for the IPCPR because you have to.
Yeah, I think what's going to happen is there's going to be a lot of stuff announced that we're not going to get a chance to smoke yet. Mm-hmm. But again, we can get into all this tomorrow. So tune in tomorrow.
Yeah, it's going to be a good show. It might be a bit of a gong show, but it's going to be a good show.
Should be fun.
We finally get to talk about, we've kind of been teasing what our coverage is going to be for IPCPR. What our strategy is going to be for IPCPR. We haven't really outright said it. Tomorrow night, it's going to be, all the cards are going to be on the table.
Wait, we have a strategy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I must have missed that.
Show up, divide, conquer, drink heavily, go to sleep.
Copy that. I'm in.
So thanks, everyone, for tuning in to another Sharing Our Pairings. Unfortunately, we're not going to be back next week because we will be in IPCPR. Just absolutely to the nose, to the forehead, buried in IPCPR coverage. So there'll be lots of shows to check out because we're going to have lots of podcast stuff. Tons and tons and tons of video coverage to keep you entertained. We'll be back the following week, presumably, with Sharing Our Pairings. I don't know what that show is going to be, but I'm sure we'll come up with something. And thanks very much for everyone who's tuned in for the last 2 years. We appreciate your support, appreciate your questions. Very excited for the IPCPR. Make sure to tune in tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the Cigar Chat on IPCPR. It'll be me, it'll be Robbie, it'll be Logan. Who knows who else? We might have a fourth person on. You never know. But as we saw in Sharing Our Pairings, drink better, but drink less.